I'm gonna take a little bit of a different angle, I guess. I'm an engineer, and so I'm gonna talk about the equipment and some of the challenges and limitations, but also some of the opportunities we have relative to equipment. I'm also gonna talk probably a little bit about just variable rate and cotton in general, some of the stuff we've done in defoliants and growth regulators as well. But mainly to talk about, okay, what do we have to do to make sure we can actually put out these prescriptions that our agronomists are recommending. A little bit of difference, I think, when we think about where we are, at least with a sensor-based application, is historically, I think, in precision ag, we've taken a couple different paths, especially at universities, depending on what kind of expertise we have, whether it's been a map-based approach or a sensor-based approach. Within a map-based approach, you sit back at your computer, you decide what's going to go where, and when you go to the field, you know how much you need. And then you've got zones, whether they be larger zones or smaller zones within a field, and as your sprayer or applicator passes into that zone, you get a rate change. And it gets one rate change, and then it tries to stabilize on a new rate. With a sensor-based controller, though, on the flip side of that, when you go to the field, you really don't know how much product you need because the sensor is actually going to determine what the rates are when you get there. And so that in and of itself is a little bit of a challenge. But now, with the systems that we're running, that rate controller gets a new rate every second. And so it never really gets a chance to stabilize in on a new rate. It doesn't, like, our rate controllers are actually designed, when we look at our sprayers and our applicators, to maintain that constant rate as we change speeds in the field, as we ramp up, we slow down for areas, for those things. So that's what we want our rate controller to be able to do, is give us that constant rate. And now we're giving it a new rate every second, and we're still slowing down to go over terraces or rough areas in the field and speeding up. So it never gets that chance to stabilize, and it makes it a little more challenging for that rate controller to work. When we look at the system, I think if you look at where we've got our sensors, if this, my pointer will work, we've got sensors that are sensing the crop, whether they're the Yara N sensors, a crop circle, or the Holland Scientific or Green Seeker sensors, going into some kind of an interface and into a little computer that now we have that indice, whether it's a NDVI or whatever it might be. Within the computer, we're going to have our algorithm that we're using, and then it's going to calculate the rate that we want, and it's going to send that to the rate controller, and then all the other standard stuff works the same after that. But essentially, we're calculating that rate that the rate controller is going to get, and we're going to send it a new one every second. I spoke about this a little bit yesterday. There's the YARN sensor. Here's the thing that I look at in sensors is they're all pretty much similar in some instances. The YARN sensor now that Jack talked about, where he had the sensor on top to measure radiation, because the solar radiation, depending on what time of day it is, where that sun angle is really important. I personally think that the active light sensors are what you need and are where you're going to go. And Yara now has an active light sensor that they're using. There's the crop circle or the Holland Scientific. To me, as I look at this and we start to move forward, we're starting to see some industry alliances here, especially Trimble bought in Green Seeker, and so that group is kind of together, and the Ag Leader, Holland Scientific alliance that they have together. I think those are going to be good for us in a sensor-based environment, especially from an equipment standpoint, because it's going to make the integration of these sensors into existing equipment much more seamless, and I think it's going to end up making it better, and hopefully we'll also be limiting the what they call it, the cab wallpaper, the clutter in the windows, and all these monitors we have, and so hopefully we can start to reduce some of those, which has been the goal for several years, and we don't seem to be achieving it. I'm going to skip the plant reflecting stuff that Jack talked about a little bit. I will say that when we look at NDVI, and somebody said once, and I don't remember who it was, that NDVI is the most used and most overused indice that we have. It's kind of what most of our sensors are looking at. It's, as you can see, the things that it's correlated to there, plant biomass, crop yield, nitrogen, chlorophyll, water, everything. Essentially, it's kind of like Eric Lund at Verus Technology used to say about EC. It kind of measures everything and a little bit of nothing sometimes. So you kind of got to look at that and say, okay, well, make sure that I'm actually getting what I want out of the industry, because with some of our crops, especially our cereal crops where we've worked with nitrogen in the past, plant biomass and yield are tied really, really close together. And in cotton, they are as well, too, until you get to a certain point. And I think Jack would say that on his high nitrogen plots, biomass and yield are no longer related. And so biomass is not what you want. And so that's a key thing I think we need to be thinking about when we're looking at cotton. I'm gonna stick specifically with liquid. We can do a lot of different things, but if we're going to talk about liquid application, and I think Jack was talking about UAN, and a lot of people are probably using that as far as their nitrogen source, we can do the same stuff with dry. But with liquid, we've got some certain challenges. If we look at a direct injection system where we're going to try to change some things, they're a little more complex. There's a time lag, especially when we think about if I'm looking at growth regulators or defoliants, and I've got a 90 or 120-foot boom, and I'm direct injecting my product at the pump, the time that it takes it to get to the tip of the boom is, I haven't calculated it, but let's just say it's too long. It's not exactly the variable rate that we want, okay, because of that. With fixed orifice nozzles that we're dealing with, if any producers in here that's ever been to any extension meetings, hopefully the engineers have beat into them that you have to quadruple the pressure to double the flow rate through an orifice nozzle. It's not a one-to-one relationship. And that's one of the great things I think that we have about as far as engineers. I'd hate to be at a soil fertility guy and have to deal with the nitrogen cycle that's not really closed. You know, as engineers, we want to wrap our hands around things. And we have a lot of physical laws that we have to obey. Gravity, one of them. That's a tough one. But that orifice, it's like if you want more material through that orifice, you've got to push on it harder. And that's just simple the way it was. So we're going to be limited in the flow ranges that we can change if we're going to use fixed orifice nozzles on variable rate equipment. You've greatly limited the rate changes that you're going to be able to get with your applicator. Pulse width modulation, the capstan or the synchro system or the AIM command system that's on our Patriot sprayers is another way. It's a little more complex. It's really good. That's what we're running on our sprayer at Oklahoma State. But we've also done some work with variable orifice nozzles. And now that pressure flow relationship on the variable orifice nozzles, Verijet is one. The Greenleaf Technologies has a turbo drop variable rate nozzle that's a variable orifice. They're a little more complex nozzles, but they allow you a wider rate change through that nozzle. Pulse width modulation, it's really simple. We've got a valve at the nozzle, and we're turning that nozzle on and off. We're turning it on and off 10 times a second. And the only thing that we're varying is the width of the pulse. How long does the nozzle stay on, and how long does it stay off? So I can change my duty cycle. I can take my valve that's pulsing, and I can just leave it open all the time, and then I'm gonna maximize my flow rate. Or it can only be open 10% of the time. And so those are the things that we're able to do. One of the things that we're doing with it, I guess with our system, is we've been a little concerned at times about this pulsing. And so we're running two valves right next to each other on the same row that we're fertilizing, and they're pulsing out of sequence. And so when one's off, the other one's on. And so we're kind of covering up. Actually, I don't think it's that big of an issue. I mean, just watching it, and I mean, as an engineer, I'm going, that's just nitrogen anyways. It's going to move. So we're probably less concerned about that than we were when we first started with it. The variable orifice nozzles, we've done a little bit of work with these. You can see the red dashed line in that figure is that's just the pressure flow relationship for nozzles. The red line is a fixed orifice nozzle where we're going from 20 to 100 PSI, and you can see how much flow rate's changing. That's a variable orifice nozzle, the blue line, so you get a much greater flow change through that nozzle by changing pressure. It's the same thing, though, as you deal with your rate controller. What your rate controller is going to do is, as you send a higher rate to it, it's going to open the valve and try to send more flow rate to the boom. That's the way it works. If you've got a fixed orifice nozzle, what happens when you try to send more material to the boom, it hits that little orifice and its pressure goes up because it can't get through it. With a variable orifice nozzle, what happens is that orifice opens a little bit more, and so pressure will rise, but doesn't rise as fast as you start to send that flow rate to it. So that's the way they work. They're I don't know, $50-$60 bucks each is what the nozzles are. So they're a little more expensive than a nozzle that we're probably used to buying, but a lot cheaper than some of the other options, though. So now, as we talked about that equipment, we're dealing with the liquid stuff. Basically, I think when we think about our applicator, the other thing we're going to put into it is the prescription. What are we going to ask the applicator to do? In cotton, the stuff in Oklahoma that we've been working on is growth regulators, defoliants, bowl openers, and nitrogen. We haven't done as much variable rate nitrogen in cotton as we have in other crops, but we can certainly translate some of that stuff over. The big thing, the question I've got is, as you start looking at these things, are where are you going to get your prescription? You know, you're going to develop it yourself? You're going to get it from industry. You're going to use what's available from your universities. And if you buy some of these systems, you'll have a drop-down menu, and you can select, you know, whatever algorithm you want. But I guess my challenge to you is to think a little bit about what you want and make sure you have an algorithm that's going to. The algorithm's nothing more than that's what's going to take your NDVI and convert it into a rate. And so you need to know what you're using. Otherwise, it's a pretty much a black box type technology. If you're just saying, I'm just going to let the sensors look at my crop and tell me what I need, then I'm saying, no, you better rethink that. Now, it is kind of a gray box system in that you don't have to be involved in the whole step, but I think you need to understand what's happening within it. My guess is that depending on what you're dealing with growth regulators and defoliants, I think we've probably got a lot of homegrown prescriptions, I think. And I don't know of anybody that's putting one. If anybody at the university's got one that they're putting out, I'd like to know about it. We don't. We're home growing our own. But the nitrogen thing is going to be a little more challenging. I think you're going to be dealing with either an industry or a university-based nitrogen algorithm for that application. The stuff that we've done with growth regulators, again, we're using NDVI exclusively, using Green Seeker sensors, at least in Oklahoma. That's a prescription that we use there on the top graph. That's our PGR rate, gallons per acre, and NDVI. Some of that's based on that graph below, where we've got that height to node ratio versus NDVI off of some small plot data. Some of it's based off of standing in the field going, I think I might put a little more on this over here. What's it look like? And so we kind of adjusted it. And so I think that's where a lot of these are going. The thing that I want you to look at, though, is look at that range. We're going from essentially 6 to about 12 gallons per acre. So just a 2-to-1 rate change. We've set our lower limit. So in other words, we said regardless of what it looks like, even bare spots in the field are going to get 6 gallons to the acre. Because we don't. It's at comfort level. And so we've also set that maximum. Regardless of what it looks like, we're not going to put any more than this on, 12 gallons to the acre. So that's kind of where we've been with that. But the thing I'd like you to look at a little bit here is look at this range that we're dealing in, about 0.75 to maybe 0.85. Only 0.1 change in NDVI, we're changing our rate there. And I'm going to kind of come back to that in a little bit. In some harvest aids, we got a little bit, little data. You can see percent open bowls. That's 9 studies over 3 years, and NDVI versus that. I don't know. To me, I always thought that the defoliant bowl openers would be an easier thing to deal with, simply because of, as the plant starts to naturally senesce, you're going to put less on it. And the sensors are going to pick that up. I think Jack said that very well. It's going to pick it up. One of the challenges I think that we have with defoliant bowl openers is we're probably dealing with a tank mix between the two. And so when you vary one, you vary the other one. Now you can direct inject one, but now we already go back to what I talked about earlier with direct injection and have one in the carrier. So you're really talking about varying them both the same. And so that may or may not be a challenge, depending on what you want to do. And I actually know less about growth regulators and defoliants than Jack does. So he doesn't work with them. So that's where we are. Now here's the deal. I might be a little uncomfortable here because I'm showing Peter and Jack's equations, and they didn't look at these really. This kind of come out of some stuff that Ed Barnes circulated, and actually I think I have Jack's actually opposite of what he'd said earlier. But this is off of some stuff that Ed Barnes had circulated a while back. When you look at nitrogen, the deal is what's the prescription going to be? Where's it going to come from? And what Jack described earlier, I think, was his looking something similar to what the Missouri one is here, where you're going to drop back on nitrogen, or you're going to put more nitrogen on the lower stuff. But again, to me, it's a complex relationship, and you got to know what you're going to want to do. Now, when you come to the rate controllers and the tuning of those and how those are going to work, this is what I talked about earlier with that slope of that line. With the prescription that we were using on defoliant, the bowl opener prescription, we're changing 1 gallon an acre for every 0.05 in NDVI. And 0.05 change in NDVI is not very much, okay? It sometimes will be random noise. But what we were doing with the growth regulators, look at that, 2.5 gallons per acre for every 0.05 change in NDVI. And now I'm sitting here going, I don't know who the idiot was that came up with this prescription, but I'm pretty sure I know his name. This is me. But that's very, very challenging for a rate controller to do that, because you're looking at the slope of that line. You're saying, oh, I change a tenth in NDVI point one, that I'm asking for a 5 gallon to the acre rate change, and then it might change right back in the next second. I'm really asking my rate controller to do a lot. And so that's what I think we need to think about with some of these prescriptions. The graph on the bottom is nothing more than the prescribed rate in blue and the as applied rate. And you can see where these little spikes are jumping up, where it's doing those types of things. It just jumps up all of a sudden to a new rate, and you got to have the rate controller tuned. I'm just glad it wasn't going after it, you know, because if the rate controller goes after that rate, then it's going to have to come back. And so to me, worry about the macro changes in the field. You know, we're doing, you know, the guys at OSU that were working on this stuff a long time before I got there are dealing with some really small scale stuff, you know, sub-meter type management. And there you want to be fast, and you've got to be able to do things like you want. But when we're putting this sensor, we're putting six sensors or maybe one sensor on the tractor cab, and we're going to do the whole boom the same, hey, don't worry about the little stuff. Worry about getting the big places in the field and getting those well. That's what I want to say. Controller adjustments, valve speed, break point, dead band. These are all things you can typically control depending on what system you're running. Did you start the timer on me?
No.
Oh, geez, I may take us on into lunch then. If you look at different rate controllers, you have different options. But typically, valve speed is going to be the main one that you're going to have. And you want to be, if you're going to get a new rate every second, you want a high valve speed. What happens if you have a high valve speed? You potentially go right by where you're wanting to be. And so you it's kind of the game that you have to play with that. And in some cases, like with the John Deere system on their sprayer, you can adjust their pump speed change. I think their a min max on a spray system is what you got, 1 to 5. And that's all you're going to get. With the T-Jet or with the Raven system, you've got a few more things that you can change. If you've got a breakpoint digit, and I always say a breakpoint is nothing, it's like that's when's it going to start slowing down. Do you ever ride around with somebody that you got your hand on the dash all the time, or maybe you got your foot on the floorboard a little harder than normal because he sees the stop sign, but he's going to wait until it gets a little more in focus before he starts slowing down for it. And that's what breakpoint is. So if you want a high breakpoint, if you've got a high valve speed and you want to settle in on a point, you got to have a high break. You got to have a breakpoint that allows that valve to start slowing down and braking. And so if you set it too close, in other words, if you set your breakpoint too close to that stop sign, you might get T-boned. You know, you can go into the intersection. And so you got to play with your controller. So now it's a balancing act, and you want it to be fast, but not too fast. And so, and it takes some adjusting. We've played around with our Raven system quite a bit to try to find that valve cal number, this valve speed, break point, damping, all those things that's going to give us the response they want. I mean, you look at an underdamped system here where the blue line is my target, and now my red line is my application rate. You want to talk about variable rate? My average is good. You know, this average is right on. But this is a system where we did not have, we're running the valve fast, but we didn't have the capability of setting a good break point. We're running the valve. This is another thing you have to think about is we're running pretty low rates to a pretty big valve. And so really that valve is almost closed. So any slight movement in that valve is huge. And so one of the things we try to do with this system is bypass some of it so that the valve actually is in a more open position. And now then those little small changes in the valve position aren't huge changes in flow rate. So we worked on that and did it. Valve settings, a couple of things. Again, we're running a Raven 440 on our system with pulse width modulation. The upper left is a valve cal. It's a 312 is in a Raven. 3 is the valve speed. 1's the breakpoint digit, and 2 is the dead band. But it's a 10% breakpoint. So it says, but once it gets within 10% of that target rate, that's when the valve's going to start slowing down. And so we've got it pretty close to it. But you can see if you get it on the bottom right, if you get it at 40% away from it, it starts slowing down too fast or too soon and never really gets there. So you're not hitting that rate. And so, again, knowing what you're going to deal with is going to be pretty important, because the only difference between these two graphs right here is the dead band is essentially the range that it's not going to make an adjustment in. It says, okay, if I'm within 3%, or if I'm within 2% of the other one, then I'm not going to make an adjustment at all because I'm already there. But the only thing difference is a break point on those two graphs. And so I'd take the upper left. The nice thing is that we found in a lot of the work that we've dealt with is whether you're doing a step rate change like this or a variable rate change or what I call a sensor-based system, the same valve cal with the system works the best with either one of them. And so I found that to be very comforting. In other words, so if you get your rate controller set up to work correctly, it doesn't matter if you're doing a map-based system or a sensor-based, it's going to function like it's supposed to, or as best as it can. And so that was encouraging to us. So I think in summary, sensor-based is feasible. It's going on in a lot of places. There's a lot of farmers that are doing it already, and probably ahead of some of the stuff that we're doing at the university. I think understanding the limitations and potential adjustments of application equipment is critical. A lot of the variable rate stuff that we did initially in Kansas when I was there, we had no real measure of what was going on. In other words, you just walk away and say, well, what I want to happen happened, and I'm good with that. And there's really no measure of whether the equipment is performing like we want it to. And I think we've got a better handle on that now. And I think there's a lot of ongoing research specifically with sensor-based stuff in cotton. And I'm really surprised that within the next the technical sessions that are going to be going on, the conferences this afternoon and tomorrow, at the number of papers that are dealing with sensor-based applications and the research that's going on, it's really quite impressive. And so with that, I appreciate Cotton Inc. supporting a lot of the work that we're doing. Here's my phone number and email address if you want to argue with me, or I'll answer questions if I can.
We do have time for questions.
Yeah, Owen. I hope everybody heard the question, because I don't think I can repeat it, and I may only be able to answer part of it because what I can remember from it. But the crux of it, I think, was going to zero with rate controllers. And I think our prescriptions that we developed specifically with growth regulators and our defoliants, we didn't go to zero mainly because, I don't know, maybe it's fear. You know, whatever it might be, we're really no different than farmers in a lot of cases, and maybe we should have been trying that in some senses. But rate controllers do not like zero. Okay, that's the bottom line. If you go to a point, whether it's a map based or a sensor based, if you send a rate controller to zero, A, it may not go there, and B, it may not come back like you want. And so that's one reason we've kind of tried to stay away from it. So, as opposed, if you're thinking zero, I guess I would probably choose maybe rates lower than what we put in. And you can be comfortable with that. If it's a zero, maybe just put in 2 gallon to the acre or something and get it a lot closer to it. But at least the rate controller then can still respond back, because rate controllers do not like going to zero and coming back. And so maybe West Engineers still have a lot of work to do on rate controllers to improve that. But I think, does that answer to a certain degree?
If you understand the need to get close to zero to save enough money, yeah.
Yeah, I think you could probably, I mean, if the difference between, I mean, the stuff that we're doing, I mean, difference between 5 gallon to the acre and 10 gallon to the acre is substantial. And if you run very much at that, and I'll talk about our variable rate defoliant stuff, you know, later today in a session. And it looks like, it's like most precision ag stuff. It depends. You know, it's the field. If the variability is there, then you've got a potential to save. And how much do you have to save? That's the question, you know, I guess, on some of it. But I don't think we have to get all the way to zero. I think, go ahead, still talk.
One more question.
I think it's more than a matter of saving. I think it's a matter of optimizing the return on investment.
Yes.
And maybe going to zero would not be the only answer.
Well, going to zero may not be the only answer. And I'm just saying that right now the limitations we have with equipment, if you ask your rate controller to go to zero, you're asking for trouble in the field. And so, We can work on that a little better. There's some systems that'll go to zero probably better than others. But if it's got a ball valve in it and you want it to go to zero, that's going to be tough. But anyways, I'll be around. Thank you.
All right.